Scary Home Companion is sponsored by Totally Tidy LLC. A female-owned business, Totally Tidy specializes in cleaning homes above the industry standard. They are raising the bar. Get clean with Totally Tidy. Currently looking for employees in southern Indiana. If you are in the area of Evansville and Newburgh, contact Totally Tidy today. TOTTIDY@hotmail.com and on Facebook as Totally Tidy LLC. A few miles north of Fall River, Massachusetts, just past the high end of Watupa Pond, nestled beneath the majestic oak trees, sits a quiet country home. Two stories, nothing fancy, but well maintained and kept for over 100 years. The house sits on 3 acres of forest and wilderness, although it is still just a stone's throw away from civilization. Or at least what passes for civilization in Fall River. This is the Fraser House, owned by Walt and Wendy. The happy couple were married way back in 1945, and in the decades since have dealt with their fair share of joy and tragedy. Just a few years ago, they were presented with a new obstacle when Walter was diagnosed with rapid-onset Alzheimer's. That had been the impetus for them to buy this house. They wanted someplace quiet and secluded, close to their roots, where they could live out their remaining years taking care of one another. There came a weekend, near the end of 2018, when Wendy needed to take a short trip and visit her sister. By this point, Walter was not fit for extended travel, nor could he be left alone for any real period of time. Thankfully, their granddaughter Willow was free from her college classes. Willow agreed to come and stay with Grandpa Walter for a few days. This was her first time being in charge, so to speak. But Willow had long kept an excellent relationship with her grandparents. After the car accident had taken her mother's life, Walter and Wendy were her last and only real relatives on this side of the family tree. She visited them often, and was comfortable being around Walter even with his declining mental faculties. Willow was looking forward to spending some time with him, although she wasn't quite sure what to expect. Walter got a little worse every time she saw him. Before the weekend was over, Willow would see a different side to the old man entirely. She would come to understand the glory and the horror of her family legacy. Drinking whiskey in the kitchen and telling scary stories around the fire. Music, monsters and mayhem. Killers, cannibals and cults. Fearful fiction and furious fact, tall tales and terrifying truths. This is A Scary Home Companion. There was just the faintest trace of snow on the ground, and the faintest hint of Benny Goodman in the air. It might have been an early winter's day, but for Fall River, this felt like spring, and Walter Frazier was loving it. He had the front window thrown open and his favorite radio station on the stereo. He sat back in his old easy chair, bathrobe and slippers resplendent, bopping back and forth just a little bit with the big band. The only radio station that he cared for was AM 808, W Swing. And they only broadcast for a few hours a day. Whenever they did, it was the hottest hits from when Walter was a younger man. It made him happy. And that made Willow happy. She was hovering at the edge of the kitchen, half staring at her phone, half watching her grandpa. This was the only radio station that Grandpa cared for, so his wife Wendy had made sure to write down the appropriate information for him. There was a post-it note stuck next to the power button that read on/off. A second sticky note was over by the band display, with an arrow pointing down at the number 800. This note read, "Aim the line here." Every time Walter forgot something, his wife would write a note and stick it where it needed to go. Even when he had a little memory lapse, Walter didn't forget how to read. He wasn't stupid. He was sick. And the sticky notes worked like a charm. Anytime he had a lapse, there was a note to guide him in the right direction. And there were dozens of notes all around the house. Little reminders for anything important that he had forgotten and might yet forget again. There were post-its on the dresser drawers, post-its on the pill bottles, post-its on the fuse box in case of a power outage. There was a post-it on the picture of his old hunting dog, Rex, to remind him that it had died some 20 years ago. This was one of the many little ways Wendy took care of Walter. At times, he loved her dearly for it. Other times, he was just grateful for whoever it was that had left these notes for him. "You need a snack, Grandpa?" Willow asked. "This song, reminds me of when I took your grandma out dancing in Boston. You should have seen me, honey pie. The old man really cut a rug." He got up to shake his pelvis. While his mind might have been unraveling, physically Walter was still quite spry. She took a picture of him without him knowing it, because Grandpa had no idea that phones could take pictures now. "Also, yes, I do want a snack," he said over his shoulder. The song was starting to wind down. "Can you make me an egg sandwich?" "Of course." "Well, can you make me 2 egg sandwiches? She giggled. "Sure, Grandpa. With salt, pepper, and mustard, right?" "Yeah, but not the regular salt. It's too salty. I like the Jewish salt." "You mean kosher salt?" "That's what I said." He sat back down. There were a few moments of silence over the speakers, just a low hum and hiss, before a new song started. Not Benny Goodman this time, but familiar to Walter all the same. "Take 5 by Dave Brubeck. Walter shifted uncomfortably in his seat. Oh, no, I don't like this. I don't like it. It's fuzzy. It smells bad, doesn't it? Do you smell that?" "What, Grandpa?" Willow came back into the living room. "That smell, it's, earthy. What do they call it on the cooking show we saw? Umami?" "That's right, Grandpa, umami. You remember that smell, right, Wendy?" I'm Willow, Grandpa. I'm Willow. Reminds me of that night.
Remember how mad you were about my clothes, Wendy? I don't think I've ever seen you so mad.
He slapped his knee and giggled. Oh, and the car. That was my fault. You were right. I should not have put the bodies in the trunk like that. We damn near never got the smell out.
What are you saying, Grandpa?
The smell, Wendy. It was different from the others. It was, and the whole family had it. So it had to be their diet, right? All of that, whatever it is they eat in
Pakistan? Willow said gently.
Ha! I knew it. You do remember. I mean, I thought they smelled a little funny at first, but once I set Rex on them, wow. The inside smelled way worse. I don't like this song. It's giving me a headache. Change it, Wendy.
Willow was now too shocked to correct her grandfather. She turned off the radio and replaced it with an iTunes playlist through her phone. Nothing but the top hits of Benny Goodman. Walter settled back into his easy chair, smiling and humming along.
"Can you tell me more?" she asked him.
"More about what, honey pie?"
That had been his pet name for Willow since as long as she can remember.
"What's wrong, Willow?"
She shook her head. "Nothing. It's nothing. I love you, Grandpa." She blew him a kiss and headed back into the kitchen. "Hey, where's my real kiss?" he called after her. But she pretended that she didn't hear him.
She needed a minute.
Grandma Wendy had left her a contact number on the side of the fridge, secured by the magnet shaped by a green tomato. But as quickly as the thought crossed her mind, Willow dismissed it. This was just crazy old man dementia talk, right? Probably repeating something he saw in Forensic Files or Dateline. Grandma did love her murder shows. But hypothetically, just for fun, just for sport, just because she couldn't derail her current train of thought, suppose for a minute that what he was saying wasn't just a fictional mishmash. If that was the case, then it certainly sounded as if he expected his wife to know what he was talking about. If Grandpa Walter had done something horrible, then it seemed that Grandma Wendy must have known about it. Had they covered something up? Rex was the name of his beloved hunting dog. Had it been involved? And had he said a whole family?
Willow, Grandpa said, his hand dropping onto her shoulder. His skin was papery and cold.
Is it time for supper yet? I'm hungry. Not yet, Grandpa, but I'm about to make you a snack.
Can you make me an egg sandwich?
Yes, of course.
Well, can you make me 2 egg sandwiches? She shooed him away.
Go turn on the TV. Find us something to watch.
I can't. I don't know how to turn off the music. I tried the radio, but it's not on the radio.
He was so sweet, so out of his element. And the way that he looked at her with big, happy eyes. Willow immediately felt her unease slipping away. Whatever that weird shit was that he had been saying, now he was just Grandpa. She hugged him. Walter laughed. And not because he thought anything was funny, just out of pure delight. And he hugged her back.
As she lay in bed that night, it took Willow quite a while to get to sleep. To pass the time, she found one of her grandma's true crime books and thumbed through it. Wendy loved to highlight her favorite passages, and this particular book had an entire chapter underscored in neon yellow. It was about the Mad Butcher of Kingsbury Run, also known as the Cleveland Torso Killer. In 1935, over 80 years ago, a dozen homeless people and prostitutes had been abducted, tortured, and dismembered, their pieces scattered through a slum. Gruesome stuff. Eventually, Willow fell into a fitful slumber. She was gently roused just after dawn. Walter stood next to her bed, fully dressed, with slush on his boots, indicating that he had been outside already. "Willow, I can't find Rex. I let him out, and then I got turned around looking for his food. I can't find his food. Where does Wendy keep the dog food, Willow? There aren't any notes. Can you help?" "Rex?" she asked, rubbing her eyes and looking for her house shoes. "Grandpa, Rex is gone." "I know, that's what I'm saying. I let him out, and I can't find him. Can't even find any tracks. It's the damnedest thing." He jerked his head around, looking around the room. He wobbled, and Willow helped him to sit at the foot of the bed. He caught his breath. "You're okay, Grandpa. You're okay. Maybe lay back for me? I think you got up too early. It's very early." Walter allowed her to lay him back. She covered him up and pulled off his wet boots. "I just want you to sleep for a while. We'll talk about Rex when you wake up." He half smiled, eyes still closed. "You know about Rex? Oh, that's so good. Your grandma will be happy." Willow closed the door quietly behind her and went downstairs to brew a pot of coffee. Double the grounds, half the water. A brew as black as midnight in a mine shaft. Sitting at the kitchen table, Willow put her phone next to her steaming mug and pulled up a search bar, but then paused. What was she supposed to search for? Despite Grandpa saying some no doubt creepy shit, there wasn't a lot to go on. He had mentioned a Pakistani family, but when? Where? Willow knew that her grandparents had lived in Ohio for a while. Or was it Illinois? Or both? At one point, they had been in Pennsylvania. But now, as she was trying to lock down concrete details, she realized that she had very few of them. So she started with, simply, Pakistani family murdered. She got a lot of results. Too many results. So she dialed it in with Pakistani family murdered America, and then added a decade at a time, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and this got her no closer. So she tried Pakistani family missing instead of murdered. And so it went, as she did a deep dive for an hour and more, when two things happened at once. Right as she found a very promising link to a story from a newspaper in rural Ohio, Willow heard Walter getting out of bed upstairs. And she would have put the phone down to check on him. Really, she would have, except that first paragraph really grabbed a hold of her attention. The story was dated 2011. About an old crime scene discovered outside of Kelloggsville, near the Ohio-Pennsylvania border. Several bodies, interred possibly 30 years ago. Thanks to dental identification, one of the bodies had been identified as a former Pakistani soldier. This man had been reported missing, along with his wife and four children, in 1965. There were few details and no follow-up stories that she could find. But out of all of it, there was one detail that resonated. The crime scene had been found thanks to an anonymous tip some weeks earlier, which means it would have come into the police in the early months of 2011, which was the same period of time when Willow's mother died in a car accident. She had no reason, no concrete reason to believe this was significant, but that little tingle she felt in the corner of her brain told her that it was significant. What if? What you reading, honey pie? Grandpa was suddenly there, kissing the top of her head, and Willow almost shrieked. Grandpa, sorry, you startled me. She regained her composure and closed the search window. I was just, the gears turned quickly. I was just thinking about Mom, about what happened. Walter patted her shoulder. Not a day goes by, Will, he said. Not a single solitary day. You know, I thought she was my one and only pride and joy. She would follow in my footsteps, but then I found out that wasn't true at all. But she brought you to us, didn't she? You're our special girl. Walter was feeling fine on this gray, chilly morning. He made scrambled eggs for them both. Thanks to the notes, he knew to turn the dial to the toaster all the way right, to make it nice and black, just how he liked it. Afterwards, they took a long walk around the grounds. There were quite a few trails on the acreage, and usually Walt liked to walk a couple of miles or more every day. The steps were easier when he was linking his arms with Willow. On the trek, she explained to him, for perhaps the 20th time, how her phone could take pictures. After that, he would point to cool-looking things and fallen trees and birds and ask Willow to take a picture, and then to show it to him. He was delighted every time. It was a slow walk, and it took most of the morning. When they got home, Walter plopped down in his favorite chair. He watched some Roy Underhill on PBS and started to fade in and out. Willow went into the next room, where Wendy kept all the photo albums and family mementos. She decided to try a different kind of deep dive. All of the Fraser family photo albums were on the bottom bookshelf. Wendy had dozens, if not hundreds, of books about true crime, but only a paltry handful of family mementos. Out of the 7 photo albums, none of which were entirely full, 4 of them contained only pictures of Willow. On the inside of each was a sticky note that read, Willow. 2 other albums contained pics of Willow's mother, from when she was little, growing up, all the way into early adulthood. A note at the front read, Wilma. A matching note at the back read, Dead Now. Willow got a little distracted on memory lane, tripping over her mother's winsome smile and troubled eyes. The last photo album. Ah, now we're talking. These were the heirloom photos. The old ones, drenched in sepia and faded gray, in all sorts of odd shapes and sizes. Many of these Willow had seen before when she dug through them as a kid, but several seemed new to her. Like this one. Walt and Wendy on a street corner in New Orleans. She's posing. He has his arms folded, his jaw cocked, mock aloof. The sticky note read, Belated honeymoon. Thanks, Grandfather Antonio. A handful of posed portraits of them were old news to Will. But then she spied a solo shot of Wendy on the stoop of a run-down townhouse apartment. Wendy couldn't have been much older than 20. She was beaming with pride. The attached notes read, Our first house in Kingsbury Run. The second note read, You took this picture, Walter. Most interesting of all, a scratchy, overexposed baby picture. There was a thin, pale man with a Van Dyke beard, holding two newborns wrapped in swaddling clothes. The sticky note read, Dad and the twins. Twins? Willow had not heard that before. She knew that Grandma had a sister, but she didn't know they were twins. That was crazy, because she knew that her mother had been part of a set of twins. The other one died in utero, so now it seemed that maybe twins ran in the family, which was just one additional reason to keep taking birth control, even if she wasn't currently getting any action. The thought of having a kid made her, ugh. But twins? No fucking way. The last few pages in the album were filled with Polaroid squares. One of them she had seen many times before. It was a snapshot of Walter and Wendy on the porch of this very house on the first day they moved in. Walter had his hand on the small of her back. His head was turned as he moved in for a kiss on her cheek. Wendy's head was leaned back as she laughed. It made Willow smile. It always made Willow smile. So she pulled it out of the book, as a memento for herself. And she saw that on the back of the Polaroid was a sticky note that read, Back to where it all began. Late afternoon, the phone started ringing. Not Willow's phone, the landline. That's your grandma, Walter called out. How do you know? Who the hell else is going to be calling? Willow picked up the handset. Hi, Grandma. We're doing great. How's your trip? They exchanged pleasantries and discussed the weather. Then Wendy spoke with Walter for a few minutes. The phone was attached to the kitchen wall, but it had one of those 30-foot-long springy cords on it, so he could wander while he talked. Here you go. He handed it back to Willow, and then he was gone, off to the bathroom. Grandma, before you go, I never knew you were a twin. Oh? Wendy seemed a little puzzled. You know they run in our family. Your mother had a twin named Wanda, and
I know that. I just didn't know that you were a twin. I found this picture I hadn't seen before. Well, how about that? Isn't that nice? Walter must have put it in the wrong album. You know how he is. Oh, so there are more pictures? I would love to see them. Oh, yes, of course there are. I don't remember exactly where I put them, but when I get back tomorrow, I'll find them for you, okay, sweetheart? So you're coming back tomorrow, then? I thought it was going to be longer. No, it'll be tomorrow, unless... Do you need me there tonight? You sound a little funny, Willow. No, don't be silly. I'm just worn out from making all these egg sandwiches. Ha! Willow Fraser, do not let that man sweet-talk his way into high cholesterol. He has got enough problems. He gets 2 egg sandwiches per day, and that's a maximum. Willow acknowledged it and then signed off. Then, she started to search for the other photo albums. They were here. She could sense it, and she was going to find them. But she knew she had to be subtle. When Grandpa was lucid, he could be pretty sharp. Willow knew she had to keep up appearances until her mind was at peace once more. Which it would be. Of course it would be. She had no doubt. She just needed to be sure. So she crept through the house, just looking, until she got to the end of the second floor hallway. There was a narrow closet-sized door that opened into a staircase leading to the attic. She took off her shoes and tiptoed upstairs. There were old boxes, piles of clothes, and a whole lot of empty space. And in the far corner, she saw a trunk. Decades old, yet still in immaculate condition. Unlike everything else in this room, it was free of dust. There was a padlock sealing the trunk, and a sticky note attached to it reading, "Ask me for the key." "Honey Pie?" Walt called up the stairs. "What are you doing up there?"
"I was looking for extra blankets. I heard it was supposed to turn cold tonight."
"The extra blankets are down here in my bedroom closet. You know that, silly goose." She hurried down the steps, kissed his cheek, and went on her way. "Of course, I know I'm a goose." As she walked away, he watched her go, and the happy glint in his eyes turned sinister. She waited until she heard Walter snoring. Willow knew that he often woke up, so she sat patiently and listened to him saw logs for almost an hour before she was confident that he was out cold. Then she slipped back up into the attic and that old trunk in the corner. She came prepared, a hammer in one hand, a flathead screwdriver in the other. The lock was
too tough to break, but the old wood of the trunk splintered easily and didn't even make much noise. This was the moment of no going back. She couldn't repair this. She couldn't put it back the way it was. When Wendy got home, she would know Willow was snooping. Fuck it. The thought of that Pakistani family had been lodged in her heart like a stone. She had to know more. She had to know everything. Willow tore the lock off the trunk and opened the lid. Inside, it was loosely packed, a jumble of things put back in a hurry. She picked up what was sitting on top of the heap, a handful of scrapbooks. She picked one at random, flipped it open, and started to scan through the dozens of news clippings, mostly from the New Orleans Times-Picayune, circa 1919, but also from a few other major papers across the country. Headlines such as, "One dead, one injured in axe attack." "Is New Orleans being stalked by a madman?" "The Axeman's Jazz. Killer strikes again." "Police clueless in Axeman case." "The Axeman's body count rises. Is there an end in sight?" And then, after all that, a handwritten letter. Not a copy, not a page from a book, but a letter written in ink. "Esteemed mortal, they have never caught me, and they never will. They have never seen me, for I am invisible, even as the ether which surrounds your earth. I am not a human being, but a spirit and a fell demon from hottest hell. I am what you Orlinians and your foolish police call the Axeman." Next to this was a page torn from a newspaper, showing the same letter in print. The original and the reprint. The last page of this scrapbook was just a photograph. A dignified-looking man with a long beard and a tall hat. He was holding an axe, and along the side of the wooden handle had been burned the word Rex. At the bottom of the page, the sticky note read, "Grandfather Antonio." Willow set it aside and opened another. This was much newer, but still just a collection of news stories. On page 7, she found what she'd been looking for. A brief blurb from the Cleveland Plain Dealer about a missing Pakistani family. The police had no leads and were asking the public for help. But that was just the beginning. Her pulse was racing as she flipped through page after page of stories about missing people, missing families, missing children, about bodies being found mutilated or bloated in Lake Erie. These stories came from over a decade. The next scrapbook was a lot thicker. It was packed with pages and pictures and stories, both behind the plastic sheets and wedged in between pages. These were all from Cleveland in the mid-1930s. Headlines dipped in yellow read, "Who is the mad butcher of Kingsbury Run? Torso killer haunts police with letters. Victims too mutilated for identification. Skid Row slasher takes another life. The devil of Cleveland takes people and leaves only pieces." Inside the back jacket was a large photograph, and it was of a man that Willow recognized. It had been the same man holding the twin babies that she found earlier. He was wearing a suit with a clean white butcher smock over the top of it. The attached sticky note read, "Dad." She pushed the other scrapbooks and photo albums aside. This was already too much to process. She couldn't read anymore. Besides, she saw something else at the bottom of the trunk. Something glossy, white, shimmering. A bridal veil. White lace, stained and dotted with old crusts of blood. Dark brown and maroon. The veil was heavy. As Willow lifted it up, it started to unravel, and she realized that it had been wrapped around something else. An axe. An axe with a pitted blade, a crooked wooden handle, and the word Rex burned into the side of it. She dropped it like it had burned her hands, and as it rattled around the bottom of the trunk, she saw one last thing. This was a picture that was too big to fit into any of these albums or books. Based on how the edges of it were torn and frayed, this picture had seen a lot of use and handling over the years. It was a family photo taken in a cemetery. Grandfather Antonio and Dad stood on either side of a small, humble gravestone labeled simply Lisbeth. Willow knew exactly where they were, where this picture had been taken. It was Oak Grove Cemetery, right here in Fall River. It was the final resting place of Lizzie Borden. The sticky notes identified Dad and Grandfather Antonio, and two additional notes pointed towards the twin children standing beneath them. They were perhaps 2 or 3 years old at this point. The twins, one a boy, one a girl. With the notes reading, Wendy and Walter. Handwritten in the margin of the photo were the words, "Back to where it all began." There was the crunch of car tires on gravel, and a pair of yellow headlights swept across the house. The front door opened. Grandma was home. Willow picked up the hammer and screwdriver before going downstairs. She walked by Grandpa's bedroom. The door was open, the bed empty. Slowly, Willow made her way into the kitchen. Wendy was busy making a pot of tea. "Why are you back early?" Willow said. "Because I could tell earlier, sweetheart," Grandma said kindly. She pulled out two cups and set them on two saucers. "I could tell it was time for the talk." Wendy sat down the saucers on opposite sides of the table and took a seat. "Come, dear. I won't bite. Let's chat." Willow sat down but held on to the hammer. Wendy sipped her tea. "Did you open the trunk?" Willow nodded. "Do you understand what it is that you saw?" Willow nodded again. "Good. Ours is a noble bloodline. The Ripper came to see our matriarch when she was in the jail cell. they only had one night together. Out of a whole lifetime, just one night. But look at all that it begat. Our family tree runs deep, Willow, and the branches extend so high. All your grandpa and I ever wanted was for you to be a part of it, with us. We love you. We both love you. Know that. We've known for years that you weren't like us, that you didn't turn out like we wanted. And that's not your fault. We don't blame you. We're not upset, just disappointed. But now, you know. So now, you have to make a choice. Just like she did. Just like your mother. Willow set the hammer down and picked up the tea. She took a little sip, spilling half of it with her trembling hand. She didn't notice that Wendy was shaking her head in disgust. We weren't mad at your mother either. Not for that. Not because she wasn't like us. It was because she called the police. She turned against the family, and you can see how we can't allow that, right? And now, we see you are just like her. Sometimes people need a little jump start. They need a trigger to discover their true nature. And we hoped that would happen with you. But here you are. You're scared half to death, with a head full of visions of murder, a head full of truth about what you are, about where you came from. And what do you do? What do, Willow? You sit down the hammer and you pick up the tea. Wendy shook her head. You're just like her, aren't you? Weak. And a fucking snitch. A blood traitor. She was so upset about that poor family. She couldn't see the beauty of it. She chose them. She chose the meat over her own blood. There was no car accident, Willow. That was a lie. Because you need to understand when you turn on the family, then you have to deal with Rex. Willow, you have broken my heart. Go ahead, Walter. Grandpa was already standing behind her, quiet as a whisper. He looked very sad. He was holding Rex. No, Grandpa, wait! Willow shouted, but she didn't reach for the hammer or the screwdriver. She held up her hands in front of her face in terror. And then the axe was up, and then it was down. And the old, pitted head was buried in between Willow's shoulder blades, so deeply that it chopped her heart in two. Walter dragged his granddaughter outside to dismember her and bisect her torso. Wendy picked up the phone in the kitchen and dialed the number written on the side of the fridge. Hey, yeah, it's what we thought would happen, Wendy said to her younger half-sister. Thank you, I appreciate that. I'm sorry, too. We had such high hopes she would turn around for us. I need this body buried. Neither Walt nor I can do it. The ground's too hard. Why don't you point those new girls in our direction? Don't use anything too obvious. Let them suss it out for themselves. They're smart. Maybe, just maybe, this family has some hope yet. Wendy hung up,
She put the pan on the stove to make a couple of egg sandwiches, because Rex always made Walter hungry.
Thank you for listening to another episode of A Scary Home Companion. This is my favorite kind of episode, because it's a self-contained story, but it ties into many previous ones, and many more to come. So I hope you were taking notes. You can find the show on social media. We're on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Email us directly at ascaryhomecompanion@gmail.com. Or, best of all, interact with the show and support it through our Patreon page. There are roughly two full seasons worth of exclusive episodes on Patreon that are going to blow your mind. Plus, we have a lot of fun extras. Join Andy, Eric, Carol, Brett, Catherine, Monica, Aaron, and the best fans in the world. Support independent horror. Support A Scary Home Companion. As usual, the episode was edited and produced by our maestro, Jeff Davidson. This time around, Jeff also provided the basis for the story itself. Astounding music in this episode, including They Went Into Seclusion and Found Madness by Verazin, Take Five by Malaventura, The Ninth Mind by SPCZ, Somewhere in the Dark by Holzina, Sinister by Crowander, Sinister Psyche by Tab and Enetek, The Butterfly by Diogenes in Hell, Family Old Portrait by Paolo Chagas, and as always, Chelsea Oxendine with the theme music.